Welcome to Why Is This Good, a podcast by the Naples Writers Workshop. I'm Christine and I'm here with John. Hey, John.
Hello.
It's my turn, and I picked a story that was suggested to me called Unaccompanied Sonata by Orson Scott Card. They came in the middle of a performance, a blind watcher with a dog on a leash and a watcher with no ears who walked unsteadily, holding to things for balance. They came in the middle of a song and did not wait for it to end. They walked to the piano and closed the lid gently, and Chris withdrew his fingers and looked at the closed lid. "Oh, Christian," said the man with a seeing eye dog. "I'm sorry," Christian answered. "I tried not to." "Oh, Christian, how can I bear doing to you what must be done?" "Do it," Christian said. And so the man with no ears took a laser knife from his coat pocket and cut off Christian's fingers and thumbs, right where they rooted into his hands. The laser cauterized and sterilized the wound even as it cut, but it's still some blood spattered on Christian's uniform. And his hands, now meaningless palms and useless knuckles, Christian stood and walked out of Joe's Bar and Grill. The people made way for him again, and they listened intently as the blind watcher said, "That was a man who broke the law and was forbidden to be a maker. He broke the law a second time, and the law insists that he be stopped from breaking down the system that makes all of you so happy." The people understood. It grieved them. It made them uncomfortable for a few hours, but once they returned home to their exactly right homes and got back to their exactly right jobs, the sheer contentment of their lives overwhelmed their momentary sorrow for Chris. After all, Chris had broken the law, and it was the law that kept them all safe and happy. Even Joe soon forgot Chris and his music. He knew he had done the right thing. He couldn't figure out, though, why a man like Chris would have broken the law in the first place, or what law he would have broken. There wasn't a law in the world that wasn't designed to make people happy, and there wasn't a law Joe could think of that he was even mildly interested in breaking. Yet, once Joe went to the piano and lifted the lid and played every key on the piano, and when he had done that, he put his head down on the piano and cried, because he knew that when Chris lost that piano, lost even his fingers so he could never play again, it was like Joe losing his bar. And if Joe ever lost his bar, his life wouldn't be worth living. As for Chris, someone else began coming to the bar, driving the same donut delivery van, and no one ever saw Chris again in that part of the world. I was pleased with myself to learn that Mr. Card writes sci-fi because I felt like this story sort of toed the line between like sci-fi or like fairy tale or, it's not like full bore one way or the other. It's definitely like this like science fiction-y type culture, right? Where things are so like carefully controlled and there's these weird rules.
Yeah, it's almost like what I was trying to dub philosophical fiction
Okay, yeah.
many episodes ago. It's like got that Ursula K. Le Guin's The Omelas story
Yeah.
or the Vonnegut story we did, kind of like those kind of Jorge Luis Borges, that story that we did, like that kind of feeling of like, let's set up a system, like a thing, and let's explore
Right.
it.
Yeah, it's like this weird system's the best way to put it. It's like some weird government thing and people kind of fall in line with it. But I mean, even the section that I just read, I didn't even re remember this, but they cut his fingers off with a laser knife. What's a laser knife, Like
Oh, yeah.
that's pretty sci-fi.
That's right. That's right. I mean, even the machine, the instrument he had at the beginning
Yeah, it was a
was a little
weird
science
like.
fictiony. Yeah.
But I mean, the Watchers are described in a way too that feels like maybe they could be Sith Lords or something.
Wandering mystics or something. Yeah.
And then you realize that, like, oh, well, this one's hobbling because he literally had whatever injury, but this one's deaf because at one point they did this to him too.
Yeah, that's the reveal at the end, right?
Yeah, you kind of find out that these are people that were all punished for breaking similar rules as makers specifically. And so all of the things that make them scary are not things that they were born with, This is things that were done to them. These aren't scary, creepy dudes. They broke a rule and were crippled in a certain way and then made part of this enforcement side of the system. So, I mean, to that point, it's like it could appear on paper, or if, the Watchers appeared in a movie scene, you'd be like, weird sci-fi. And then you kind of realize, oh, these are just normal people. Anyway, so yeah, interesting to see that it kind of like towed that line because it's not explicit. It's not such a strange concept or premise that if you don't like sci-fi, you wouldn't want to read it, But
Yeah,
there is
that's true.
some kind of element there. And then otherwise, it's very much, I mean, you got a bartender named Joe. Otherwise, this is just run-of-the-mill. Could be a story happening in Pennsylvania where a guy comes from somewhere and starts playing music at a bar, and then you
Yeah.
never really see him again because he got in trouble.
What was the other job he did? It was like something on the road.
Yeah, he ends up being a road worker. I don't know what his title is.
He's holding the sign, the slow,
Turning it, yeah.
go slow and stop. Yeah.
Also very Midwest. It's construction nonstop up here. Yeah, so I mean, to summarize it, this was a guy that was like born into a society where he was supposed to make music, and then he breaks a rule by listening to music that was written before him, and then they find out because suddenly he like starts removing what he thinks will tip people off from his music. It wasn't derivative to begin with, but it becomes derivative, and they visit him.
Becomes
They're like,
anti-derivative. I thought that
yeah.
was clever. It's like you're avoiding fugues. You're avoiding anything that could be Bach derived, which indicates to us that you listen to Bach and want to hide it.
I know. And it's so funny to me that the people in charge of this society are like, listen, we listen to Bach because we're allowed.
Yeah.
And we don't like what you're doing with or without him right now. We don't like it at all. It's like, oh my gosh, like it's weird that there's like a group of people that are so familiar with everything out there that they can enforce the rules to this like specificity, but also
Yeah.
that they think that not knowing it would make people happier somehow. Anyway, so he breaks the rule and then he gets banished to this like town where he's driving the donuts and then he breaks the rules playing piano. And then even without his fingers, he starts singing. And then they cut his voice out, which that part's sci-fi too, right? They don't like slice his throat. They just
He
like
didn't
wave a little wand.
specify. He was just like, he grabbed the right tool and they didn't specify what tool it was because it's like a little mystery. And when you get there, he uses the tool and they don't specify what, how it works or anything. It's just use the tool and then that's it. No more voice. So we don't even know what using the tool looks like. Did he like stab him in the throat or did he just wave it in front of his face? You know,
I'm picturing Men in Black.
flashy thingy.
Yeah, it's just real quick and compact.
Yeah, but that, yeah, absolutely. Obviously sci-fi as well.
But those are the only hints of it. And then the ending here is just that he basically becomes banished to an existence where he can't very well interact with anyone around him. But then he hears the boys on the streets like singing one of his songs.
Yeah.
And he's like, "Oh, that's good enough." Which honestly I think is good enough as an unpublished writer. If somebody out there were to years down the road like know of something I had done, even a small group of people, I mean that's enough, you know? And what's interesting here though is that like the society that they've set up, they've set it up so that people like Christian Haraldsson are making music for the Joes of the world who, like in the section I read, are very happy with these jobs that they've been told are what are gonna make them happiest. It's like when you take those aptitude tests in high school. And for me, they told me I should like farm fish. And I was like, is that a job? Is that a job, farming fish?
It is a job. I don't know how you would get it, but
Yeah, they're like, you'd be really good at this. I'm like, are you guys reading into my last name a little too
are
much?
they?
Yeah.
What
Did I fill in a Scantron weird?
a weird
Yeah.
specificity.
I know. I remember reading this and being like, I mean, all right. But they all have like their very like happy little jobs. And I guess my point is like, even the ending wasn't like fully satisfying for me in the sense that I did not think of Christian as someone that wanted recognition for his work. So realizing that like his work had been like out in the world was interesting that that seemed to be like enough for him. But they call him a maker. And I feel like that's more true to his even motivations, right? This is a guy that like was born with an innate ability, but even in the society where they're given the chance to do this, it's not about doing anything personally for yourself. It's about doing it for everyone else. But I think Christian was just happy creating, right? Because he goes to the bar and he breaks the rule because he just can't help it. It's nice to have an audience, but even if he were alone in the cabin like he was at the beginning, he just wants to create. And I think that's like what kind of sticks with me in this is the idea that like you see the scene where Joe's like, what kind of law would he have broken? What could he have done that would make him want to risk losing his fingers, you know? And I think the answer is that this Christian guy, he can't help it. He's only happy when he's doing this. Otherwise, he's just like a shell of himself. So he's not like hungry for fame or recognition or praise or even sharing his work, but he just feels like he has to create something.
Yeah, my reaction was I kept thinking about this is going to be a long walk, but
You seem tired. Yeah.
I kept thinking of Plato's Republic
Oh.
because the question of Plato's Republic is what is justice? And like Plato answers it by saying maintaining the order of society is like the root of justice, basically. And then after a couple thousand years, the Enlightenment came along and said, no, justice is rooted in the individual. And so there's always been this tension between should we organize society so that it's best for individuals or best for the system that the individuals live in, like to maintain the system or to maintain individual rights, freedoms, liberties, whatever. And this is like a play within that, you know, it's like he has his own individual kind of like needs, his own, I want to explore music, I want to create, I want to do all these things. But they're like, you have to do it within the system. And if you don't, we're going to punish you.
Right.
For the good of the system. Like, yeah, you know, most of the time, it's like the rules are, well, I'm sorry, I have to punish you because that's the law. Like, you broke the law, I have to do it. There's no moment in the story where one of the watchers comes up and says, man, I'm going to let you slide because it's just so beautiful what you do. Which is kind of what you'd expect from a certain like kind of enlightenment ideals. Like, you know, the individual does supersede the system.
Right.
If by kind of like most of our modern conception, or ought to supersede the system. So you would expect kind of a hero for the individual to appear at some point in the story, but it never does, which is an interesting thing to explore. So anyway, that was kind of thoughts I was thinking about, because I was trying to figure out, I don't think this story, like a lot of stories like this, you want to read it as an allegory of some kind. Like I can easily look at this and say, as a writer, I want to be him in the woods, just like being able to just create, right? And like, what does it represent if I were a writer trying to do that, that they then would come and take away my instrument and make me deliver donuts? And what does it mean that if I tried to write in secret, they would cut off my fingers? And what would it mean? So I try to, like, my instinct is to allegorize the story and be like, how does this apply to me as my desire to be a writer and like doing that in the world? But I think that's usually not the right way to read something like this. You want to read it for what it actually is. It's a story about this particular person and what they go through. And like, that's how you can get to the ending and find satisfaction in it. Because he, like, if his goal is only to make, to be a maker, to make the music, then by the time he gets to the end and the kids tell him, these songs aren't sad. Sure, they make people cry, but they aren't sad. It's just that they are written by a man who knows. And he asks them, knows what? He just knows. He just knows, that's all. Knows it all. It's like his illegal music has managed to affect people.
Right.
And like, I can't apply that to the allegory I'm trying to create, right? That's just what happens for him in the story. I mean, I can try to like come up with something and be like, oh, I need to write like really important things, but it wouldn't work because I don't live in that system. I don't live in that world.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's something too, though, to be said for the fact that we don't know what the songs are about and what it is they're sharing. This could be the most basic top 40 song in the world. But I think even what the kids are articulating here is not just that it's like universally popular, but that they can tell that it was written by a person that got to see something that they didn't get to see. He got to understand Bach. He got to like understand the system of this world like intimately. And you could argue that the music he started creating once he was forced to leave the cabin was better than what he would have made in the cabin. That's what makes his music stand out.
Yeah, because his experience at the bar, even like getting those audiences.
And these are kids that are singing a song that he wrote when he worked on the road crew.
Yeah, it was the road crew songs. Yeah.
Yeah. And so these are songs that he started singing after he was punished, after he was banished, after he listened to Bach. It's not until he's like on the road crew where these people are, they seem to be of like a different class, where they like understand a little more like what it is to like suffer, that the music starts to like, first off, become the music that these kids know, but then also it's the road crew that encourages him repeatedly. The road crew's like begging. It's like, please, 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 we won't tell anyone. We'll protect you. Like, we need this as much as you need it. But we can also tell that like what you're singing about here comes from a place of understanding this world. But like, we want to feel whatever it is you're feeling. So maybe it's less about, like I said at the beginning, like that he wants some kind of recognition, but he was able to impart through his music, and arguably only through music, what it feels like to go through what he's gone through.
Yeah, because he's the suffering, it becomes part of it.
Yeah, so the kids are like, it's sad, but it's not sad. It's more like, you know, when they talk about the only reason we're able to feel happy is because we've felt sad before. So sure, it's sad, but these kids feel everything bigger because the difference is more stark. Anyway, the beginning too felt to me like, I was picturing Middle Earth.
Middle Earth?
Yeah, he's just in like this like little cabin. It says he grew up cared for by unsinging servants, and the only music he was allowed to hear was birdsong and wind song and the crackling of winter wood, thunder, and the faint cry of golden leaves as they broke free and tumbled to the earth, rain on the roof and the drip of water from icicles, the chatter of squirrels and the deep silence of snow falling on a moonless night.
I mean, this is very Tolkien-esque in the kind of the elven.
It's Eden.
elves kind of just pursuing art over their longeval lives.
Yeah, and what's interesting here that I'm just now realizing, going back to what I said, is like everything I just described here is just like, you know, Mother Nature at its finest. It's all beautiful and nice and wonderful, and this is all he's exposed to and all he's allowed to be exposed to. So it makes sense that like the music he was making at first that's supposed to make people happy can only be about happy things. And it's not until he's punished that he's like, yeah, you know, the squirrels are cool and all, but like, have you ever had your fingers taken off? And then his music really starts to have like impact.
Yeah, or worked on a road crew.
Yeah, he's like, have you ever spun a sign that says slow or stop all day? He's like, until you've spun
with
a
no
sign.
fingers.
Yeah, with those. Have you ever spun a sign between your palms? So yeah, didn't it feel kind of hobbity? He's like in a little cabin. It's just quiet and nice.
Yeah, it sounded idyllic. I was like, I want to write in that cabin.
Right.
Maybe a typewriter, big sheaf of papers.
Yeah. Aw. And then I forgot this part, but it says he learned to make winds sing through his instrument. He learned to make summer one of the songs he could play at will. Green, with its infinite variations, was his most subtle harmony. The birds cried out from his instrument with all the passion of Christian's loneliness. So that's the other like interesting part too, is like, and I thought this first reading it, it's like, oh man, I think as a writer, and I don't think of myself as serious about my craft as like Christian or like half the people that I know, you know, but I do know that I couldn't very well be put in a cabin with no influence and feel inspired to write much of anything, you know.
Oh, interesting.
And not everything I write is necessarily like autobiographical or anything, but you have to like experience an emotion yourself, I feel like, as a writer or as a singer, for you to be able to like, first of all, convey it genuinely, you know, authentically. But also for me, that's the only reason I would want to convey it in the first place, is because I feel like I felt it and I want other people to know what it feels like to feel that. My favorite type of writing and the favorite writing I like to do is the kind of writing that, you know, you read and just identify with so strongly. So I don't know that I could like sit in a cabin and be like, let me tell you about these birds again, you know?
I think that's one of John Gardner's points in his book. I think it's on Becoming a Novelist, but he says, Hemingway always said, how do you become a good writer? Is you go away and write. And he said, what he fails to mention is that when he went away to write, he went to Paris and hung out with like the best writers of his age.
He went to Africa. He flew planes. He went to war.
He learned to write in Paris in the company of great writers. He went to Gertrude Stein and like, so John Gardner's point is eventually you can go away, but first you have to live
experience.
Something. You have to find something to write about. And that's where, you know, he talks about the writer's eye and like just being able to like experience life in a way that picks up the details that you can then put in your fiction, which is, I think, a key skill. Like his ability to listen to see the color green and make a song out of it is like, that's real. I love this description of like, I'm making music. One of my favorite songs is Summer. Like, what a cool way to think about it. One of his best songs was Green. Like, there's just like things that aren't songs that become songs through his expression.
Right.
That's a cool way to think about, you know, kind of like rudimentary influence.
Sure. I'm trying to think what I would take away from this, really. Maybe just the idea that, like, we initially started talking about, there's types of sci-fi that talk about a system. What was the story that we read where the parents' kid ends up on that TV show and they were, like, watching him?
Oh, Harrison Bergeron, Kurt
Vonnegut.
Okay.
Yeah, I was going to say Harrison Bergeron, and then I was thinking that I was got confused with Flowers for Algernon. I was like, I think it's the wrong
similar
one.
Syllables.
Yeah.
That's the mouse that winds up on TV.
Yeah, exactly. There's stories that are sort of about this system that we kind of all agree to follow. And it's only when someone gets punished for like towing the line or stepping out of line that you even question the system in the first place or become like aware of it again.
Yeah, that's good news.
Yeah, there's something like very sci-fi about that, because it's the idea that we could all be living in a system like that, that we all are blind to or take for granted or don't think much of until you see someone do something that gets them in trouble. And then you kind of realize like we're all under someone's thumb or we're all being watched, right? And that there's something about that that feels like very 1984.
I think that's where story comes from. It's like this, the person pushing against the boundaries and the boundaries pushing back and figuring out what that looks like.
Yeah, it's stories are only a result of conflict, right?
Oh, I don't like using the word conflict. I try to use tension, try to use use like momentum.
Problems.
Yeah.
Big problems.
Problems. Issues.
Yeah. And in this case, it's like a societal one, right?
Yeah.
It's not an interpersonal tension.
Yeah. It is an interesting reflective tension to go back and like acknowledge or remember that every time the Watcher came and punished him in some way, that Watcher was someone who had been punished and had been right. trying to push against those boundaries in the same way.
Yeah.
So it's like this really interesting feedback.
Right. And like we said, this is, you know, by a sci-fi writer with sci-fi elements and whatever you want to categorize it as, it's another interesting gateway to that genre. So if you can think of like a story that you're wondering about writing, it's just an interesting lens to view it through that can kind of like help inform like what happens next. It doesn't all have to play by the rules we're familiar with. You can invent this like group of watchers that comes in and enforces things, and it just becomes a lot more memorable story.
That's kind of related to my takeaway. And I don't know if I made this point very well earlier when I was talking about thinking of like reading a story as an allegory. Like we often have that instinct to allegorize what we're reading and be like, oh, that's what this means. That's what this means. This is how I can apply it to myself.
Right.
But if you're thinking of, if you're creating a story, so to go the other direction and you have an idea of like, I want to write a story about like, I'm going to allegorize a writer, but instead of a writer, he's going to be a musician or he's going to be this or that.
Right.
And like, he's going to live in this world that works against him. And this is how it's going to play out. I think the key to doing a thing like that is to not get caught by the allegory of it.
I thought you were going to say by the Watchers.
Don't get caught by the Watchers. Not to like be trapped by your equations, you know, like
right.
That's what this is. That's what this is. It's like once you set it up, once you set up the system that your story is working inside of, you got to follow the logic of the story. You got to follow the logic of characters. And like they might even undermine your intentions. You might discover as you write that by the logic of what the character feels, thinks, how they will act. Like I could see a different version of this story where Christian just keeps going. And like, no matter, he's not as acquiescent in his punishment. He's not just like, okay, cut my fingers off. He's more like, he flees. He runs out of the bar. And you're like, then he's this underground jazz pianist, you know, for a couple of years. And then they're chasing him for a while. That would be a different story. But the fact that he just gives in is a different thing. And I think that comes from the logic of what's happening in the system. It foreshadows what the ending is.
Right.
It foreshadows what role the Watchers actually have in the society and a lot of different things. So once you have your system in your story, like let it play out its own logic.
Yeah.
Don't adhere to like, if you want to say something about the allegory that informed the creation of the system.
Yeah. You have to play by its own rules.
Yeah.
The rules you set up.
Which would be sad if like you like, I'm going to say something about capitalism. And then like, turns out that you wanted to critique capitalism, but your story winds up like applauding it. And you're like, damn it.
Yeah. Well, even if that's what ends up happening, there's going to be someone, some literary critic, like just hell bent on a specific interpretation anyway. You know what I mean? Like it's out of your hands. Yeah. So hopefully someone would get the initial point, actually what the writer's trying to say here, and you wouldn't know it.
Yeah. I know it seems like the evil corporate baron wins in the end, but in reality, it's a loss.
Thanks, guys.
If you enjoyed this episode, consider joining our Patreon. Your support helps us keep the show running. Find out more at patreon.com/whyisthisgoodpodcast. And for industry news, writing tips, and great short fiction, join our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/Naples Writers Workshop. You can also subscribe to our monthly newsletter at napleswritersworkshop.com.